and welcome to this episode of Ann Arbor AF, a podcast for folks trying to figure out what's going on in Ann Arbor. We discuss current events in local politics and policy, governance, and other civic good times. I'm Jess Lita, and I'm here with co-host Molly Kleinman. We both use she, her pronouns. We're here to help you get informed and get involved. It's your city. Let's jump in. Today, we're talking about the climate millage that will be on the ballot this November. Last episode, we interviewed Office of Sustainability and Innovation Director Dr. Missy Stultz about what passing the millage would accomplish. This time, we want to talk about our thoughts and feelings.
If you're listening to this episode right after it was released, the election is almost here, the primary election that is. So vote, help your friends and family vote. These midterm city council primaries are often decided with only a handful of votes in one way or another. So really, truly, every vote counts when we're talking about these elections, and every single individual can make a difference. So get out there, get your friends out there, and vote.
That's right. And once the primary passes, we still have a general coming up in November. So many elections to look forward to. So this climate action millage, where did it come from? December of last year, council voted to put a climate action millage on the ballot, and it's coming up. They talked a little bit about the language, had it approved by the attorney general, had it approved by council, and then now it's coming up on the November ballot. We are spending a little bit of time talking about it because it is a consequential amount of money. And while I think largely in Ann Arbor, we support working on the climate, I think there's enough nuance to this millage that it was worth really kind of getting into it. But we're not just going to get into it. We're going to get into it. In talking about the millage, Molly and I discovered that we have a fundamental disagreement about it. And we so rarely disagree about anything that this felt like an opportunity to really explore that difference. And we also believe, like for ourselves and as like a little pod, that knowing how to disagree with people is really important to knowing how to work with them. And so we wanted to model that process for you all. So we are here fighting. It's going to be like the kindest, gentlest fight ever, which I think is a good place to start, right? Like you start with the easy ones to build your muscle for the more challenging ones. And I just like want to name for the listeners and Molly for you, maybe you feel this way, maybe you don't. I'm not entirely comfortable doing this.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. But I also felt that it was really important. And so I'm really glad that we're having this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. We're all going to learn some things, I think, from this conversation. That's one way or another.
All right. So when this first came up, like when we first started talking about it, and we realized there's a difference. What I realized is that you're not a fan. And so can you tell me a little bit about that?
I can. And I want to preface all of this by saying that I am probably going to vote yes on this millage. And I'm probably going to encourage our listeners to vote yes on this millage. I think, as I expected, our conversation with Missy really helped deepen my understanding of what this was about and the potential for how we could spend this money. But the discomfort, I think, is not going to go away. And what that comes from for me with this millage is that there are enormous things we could be doing right now that would make a major difference, a measurable difference that we know about in our climate emissions that would not cost the city any money. They could potentially even save us money or bring in new money, and we're not doing them, and we're not going to do them tomorrow or maybe even anytime soon. And it's because the political leadership isn't there. I've been saying that it's about political will, and what I've realized is that it's actually more about political leadership. And that, I mean, that both in terms of our electeds and in terms of people out in the community. I had similar fears going into the new sidewalk millage of 2020. People said that the way we were going to get new sidewalks was to overcome this issue of assessments, where property owners had to contribute to the cost of a new sidewalk in a place where there wasn't a sidewalk. And that if we took that away, then we could put in new sidewalks wherever we felt we needed them.
And specifically, that requirement for the contribution led to a lot of people saying no, citing economic hardship, right? Like, I cannot afford the sidewalk, therefore we cannot have this sidewalk.
Correct. And city council often sided with the property owners in those cases, and there are sidewalk gaps that we still have not filled. However, the objections to new sidewalks are always about much, have always been about much more than money. And so when this new millage came out that was like, we already have a millage to maintain our current sidewalks, we're going to put out a new millage to build new sidewalks, I didn't buy it that was actually going to help us get new sidewalks. And it turns out that my concerns have panned out. We have had repeated situations where the city is going to fill a sidewalk gap, and the property owners, since they can no longer object in terms of money, they object in terms of their trees that have to be cut down, or they object in terms of the parking spots they're going to lose, or they object in terms of being responsible for the maintenance of those sidewalks in terms of shoveling the snow. And in some cases, city council has continued to side with the property owners, and there continue to be sidewalk gaps in places where we now are taxing ourselves. We're paying the money to put in the sidewalks and we're not getting them.
And can't spend the money.
And we can't, I mean, we're spending, we are managing to spend it. We're not, it's not like we're not getting any new sidewalks, but we're still having these same barriers. So going into the climate millage, it was the thing that's top of mind for me, is that we are going to tax ourselves, and the things that we need to do to achieve climate neutrality, like reduce our vehicle miles traveled by 50%, like create denser neighborhoods where people can walk and bike to all of the things that they need. We're not doing those things. These were where my feelings were coming in with this millage.
I was just going to say, I know what you mean about saying yes with reservations, how you're describing how you're going to vote for this. That was how I felt about the schools millage. I think it was also 2020. Yep. Or maybe it was last year. I don't remember. All I remember is it was $1 billion.
Yes, $1 billion.
And I said yes with reservations. The specific reason that I had reservations was that the school didn't put out a plan ahead of time for how they were going to spend the money. What they put out was a case for the needs that they had, which was largely had to do with the schools themselves, the physical facilities, and talking about, I think, technology and building capacity for the future. So they talked about the needs, but they didn't talk about how they were going to spend it. There wasn't a proposed budget. There wasn't suggested allocations. And what it made it feel like to me was, we're not totally sure. We'll ask for $1 billion and just hope that it works out. Once the vote passed, Ann Arbor, you know, as it typically does, not always, but typically turned out, you know, really kind of overwhelmingly in support of this millage, despite the size. Afterwards, I think the school put a committee or something into place to create a plan about how to spend this money. But as with you, my fears have been realized. The school continues to drop huge sums of money that aren't really totally consistent with any strategic goals or framework that they've identified. I'm thinking in particular of a couple of land purchases that they've made over the last year that feels like they've done it because they had the money and not because they're using it to make the schools or facilities or capacities any better. So I absolutely hear you with the yes with reservations.
Right. And, you know, to be very clear, this climate millage does not look like that. There's a lot of detail about how the money would be spent. And we know exactly the kinds of things that it would be going towards. What my big concern comes down to is that I'm afraid that especially our political leaders, and I've seen them do this, they treat millages as the end and not the beginning of the work. So, for example, we have electeds in Ann Arbor who have been vocally supporting the climate millage and like, oh, climate, but who voted in favor of widening the East Medical Center Drive Bridge, who voted in favor of not installing sidewalks because four property owners didn't want sidewalks. They're doing this thing that looks good, but when the hard votes come, they're not voting the way we need them to. So I'm really worried about passing this millage and then having the whole city think we're done. And it's really, that's not okay. that won't get us the things that this millage is promising to get us.
You're absolutely right. Counterpoint.
Yes.
There are a lot of things that the millage does that the budget allocations can do that don't require political or politicized decisions. Basically, it comes down to staff execution. Missy talked on the episode about bulk equipment buys. She talked a little bit about implementing existing programs, including at the state level. Michigan has a number of sustainability programs, often geared towards low-income folks, which this millage and OSI, the Office of Sustainability and Innovations, are really well poised to help carry out, and nothing else is, and no one else is. They are also in a great position, and this money helps them be in an even better position to help support ongoing community conversations that continue to identify what's needed in our community. Whether it's putting solar on schools or on the landfill, or helping low-income and older homeowners. One of the things that I was reminded of in that last episode is that 25% of Washtenaw County seniors live in poverty, 25%. And aging in place in their homes is difficult, uncomfortable, and sometimes dangerous. And so things like resources like this millage help put resources to those programs. And we don't need a political decision. We don't, that doesn't happen by vote. That doesn't happen by community engagement meeting. That just happens by, we have the money. We've already identified the priority. We finally get to do it.
Right. And I will say, both when we were talking to Missy, and then again, when I was listening to that episode to prepare for this one, when Missy talked about the grant that she brought in to install solar for two households that were going to probably have to leave their homes, and that she was able to make that difference for them and bring that sort of carbon transition into their lives in a way that made their lives better. Like, I got choked up both times, like real reflect over here. That was a particularly compelling piece of the argument for me, for sure. That there's so many things we can do that are not political decisions. And I think that if more than anything is probably the thing that pushed me over the edge to like, probably I'll vote yes. Whereas like with the sidewalk millage, I don't think I've said this publicly anywhere. I voted no on that sidewalk millage because I did not believe it was going to do what we needed it to do. But this, like, it's convincing that we could be doing all of these things and funding them in ways that don't require writing grants constantly, because I know how much labor that takes.
Yeah. And one of the things that I appreciated in thinking through the millage, and Molly, I have so appreciated you bringing up your hesitations about this millage, because it's really gotten me to question my support and make sure that I'm not just signing a check because I too believe in the planet. And like, here's a blank check, do some green stuff with the money. I don't know. When I was reading through the budget, the allocation, the memo, and the HE0 framework again, one of the things that I really, really deeply appreciated is, as Missy reminded us in the last episode, the HE0 framework is set up with seven, she has a better word for it, but pillars, right? So seven areas that they are absolutely required for us to work on to get to sustainability. I think she said there's no one tactic that's going to get there. They're tactic agnostic, but they have to work on each of the seven areas. And when it comes to the millage, what they did was they proposed a general allocation per year for each of the seven pillars. But what they said was, this isn't specific. Like, we are reserving the right to kind of figure this out as we go along. But they did get really specific about the types of things. Like, I think in each of the seven areas, if there were fewer than 10 tactics mentioned for each one, I'd be surprised. Like, it was comprehensive. But what they were saying is, this is the kind of thing we'd spend for in each of the seven pillars. This is approximately what we think the relative allocation should be, but we reserve the right to, as we get better information, to adjust that as we go along without going back to the voters and without going back to council. So again, it's that element of it isn't politicized, and the fact that they're building that flexibility into it, the fact that this millage feels like a learning millage, but in a good way, that gave me extra confidence in it.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump to my next point against the millage, which is about the fact that we're funding it through another tax increase. Because if we were allowing a lot more density in development than what we currently allow, we could be funding this work purely with the increased revenues that that development would bring. And if we had been doing this development over the last 10, 20 years, we would not be in the position we're in now, where we keep having to put millage after millage forward to fund our values. Ann Arbor tends to vote yes on millages with a few notable exceptions. So I worry about millage fatigue. And I also worry about voters thinking they're done, just like electeds. Like, I voted for the climate millage. I'm done. We're good. I don't have to think about the city changing in ways I don't like. I don't have to think about like my own personal lifestyle changes. And, you know, it's going to, I think one thing that Missy really talked about is that it's going to take everything from the micro to the macro to prevent the climate catastrophes that we're already facing. I think it's important not to put it all on the individual, but some of it is with the individual, because especially when we talk about things like transportation. So it's like, oh, I'm paying for this with my taxes. I don't have to ride the bus or drive less or do anything to my home to like make it more efficient. And so that's my next one.
That's a great point. And I'm going to disagree with you by agreeing with you, which is that in my purest self, in my purest heart, I don't think this money should come from a millage. I don't think it should come from an incremental tax. I think it should come exclusively from building, whether it's new builds or redevelopments. I think that that's where we should be capturing this money. And I do think, I don't know exactly how those taxes are allocated, how it goes to the general fund, how it goes to specific funds, anything like that. I would love to understand whether and how those tax dollars do get allocated to carbon neutrality work. My problem is that all development takes time. And in Ann Arbor, it takes even more time if it happens at all. It often doesn't. If we're going to wait for that development in this current policy environment, and I'll be explicit too and name what you said of a failure of political leadership, and also being realistic, the current labor and material supply environment, we're not going to get this work funded. Like if we're waiting to do it the right way, this is no way. For me, that feels like the perfect being the enemy of the good. Having said that, I will acknowledge that part of the reason we have a carbon neutrality framework, this A20 framework at all, is because they took land use strategies out of it. And that is, in my opinion, it's actually devastating. I think that they hollowed out what this could be by not making that plan commit to land use patterns. And that means both housing and transportation, right? Like, so you said you took a look at the millage budget, and one of the things that it includes is an allocation for non-motorized transportation. So how are we using roads in ways that don't necessarily prioritize cars? But do we have a clear priority and mandatory emphasis on that? We do not, because council at the time said they wouldn't vote for it if that was in there. So land use was backed out of it. And that's another one of the reasons that I am hesitant to not support the millage in advance of waiting for development dollars, because council, it wasn't this specific council, these specific council members, majority council that said that, but it was city council that said, we're not going to support carbon neutrality work if it means we have to make hard decisions about housing and transportation. And honestly, I think that is true.
Yeah.
I think that is true of this council as well. Something that I'll note about the funding mechanism is that this is a 20-year millage. If passed, it goes into effect January 1, 2023, and is intended to be in effect for 20 years. We still don't have a current comprehensive land use plan. And Missy mentioned that in the last episode as well. And she said that's actually really urgent work. And in this city, we've never had a comprehensive housing plan ever. So I'd like to see us use this millage time to plan for how development is going to pay for our carbon neutrality work in the medium and long term, meaning at the general fund, so that this millage doesn't have to be renewed. Let's plan obsolescence. Let's say this millage is the last millage.
Yeah. And that, I like that. I like that a lot. Not every millage needs to be renewed. Not every millage needs to go on forever. I'm not super confident we will actually use the time that well. Given what we know about the political environment, and specifically around doing comprehensive land use plan, which we talked about the comprehensive plan in a little bit in the zoning episode, right? I'm thinking we need to like dig into comprehensive.
We did a deeper dive. Maybe we should deeper dive ourselves on that. But yeah, we did talk about it. We talked about the fact then that it was stale, and we're almost a year and a half later, and it's a little bit staler now.
Yeah. Right. And so this sort of brings back when we were planning out this episode and Jess was sort of trying to lay out like points for and against, I really felt like I really only had one point against, and I'm just saying it in different ways, but it is, I think, the challenge for this millage, especially if we pass it, which is that it won't do anything about the political obstacles that we still need to work through. So Jess mentioned the fact that land use was omitted from the A20 framework. The fact that while we currently have a majority on council that's like somewhat development friendly, I'm not going to say it's like the friendliest, because especially when we talk about things like the TC, the transportation corridor zonings, like that's moving at a snail's pace. We're being so slow and cautious about it.
You know who's going to beat us to upzoning? Florida. Florida is going to beat us to upzoning.
Yeah.
God damn it, you guys. We can do better.
Yeah, right. So in sort of like a little bit development friendly, but we also, and it's a slightly different set of people, but it's still a majority on council, they very clearly have said that they prefer car-centric roads over people-centered mobility. When it comes down to the votes, that's how they're voting. And this is one of the seven pillars. And this is, you know, I would have thought that seeing that this millage is specifically going to help support the bike lane, the protected bike infrastructure and the pedestrian infrastructure that we continuously don't have enough money to do. You know, there's the demand for neighborhood traffic calming is like vastly outstripping our ability to do it. In theory, some of this money is going to fund that work. And then we still don't have a tiny snowplow, which is the reason why we're not putting in real protection on our bike lanes, because we can't plow them. The city budgeted for it, but it's like an ongoing issue. And it's like, you know, if we had this millage, we could just buy the damn snowplow and put in some real protection. But these are still mostly council decisions. And if council's going to keep not doing it, or if staff isn't even going to put it forward because they don't trust council to accept what they want to do, yes, absolutely. Solar for people who can't afford it is great. Like a lot of these non-political decisions are super important. And again, probably the reason I will end up voting yes on this millage. But the political obstacles are all still going to be there. And I worry about the millage moving us not in a good direction in terms of getting through, like getting over those obstacles.
I agree with you. And I think we have a process problem. I think we ask for permission too often and at the wrong points in the process. I've been thinking a lot about community engagement for the past forever. I don't know, long time. And I absolutely believe that we need strategy and policy that is deeply informed by the community it's intended to serve. And I think once that strategy has been identified, we need to trust our staff, who are the technical experts, who have professional experience and expertise, to align with those values, to align with that future vision, and determine how to implement. One of the challenges, you're talking about political leadership and the ways that people check out or check back in kind of in the wrong ways. Let's say a bike lane, right? So we've identified that we need to reduce vehicle miles traveled by 50% by 2030, which is in like a minute, by the way.
Very, very soon.
Right. And that means making both housing and transportation choices. But we still put up a lot of housing for public discussion and public input. And we still put up bike lanes for public discussion and public input, as though it's a question of whether or not we need them when we've already said we do. One of the challenges is with those community engagement meetings and well-intentioned surveys, it really comes across, and I think staff generally genuinely are asking for permission. Please, may I have this bike lane, when we've already said, yes, we need to just implement. I saw this wonderful article title in the last week or so that said something like, we're still asking for permission on bike lanes when we've collectively agreed that the planet is burning. And I very much agree with that. And so I think part of what we're looking at is a political leadership issue. I think another part is a process issue where we're asking too many questions because we are tokenizing community, quote unquote, engagement, quote unquote, input in absolutely the wrong ways.
Yeah.
I do also want to refer back to when I was re-listening to Missy's episode. First of all, it was super fun.
Yeah, we had fun.
The conversation was fun and listening to it was fun. But she also said this that resonated so deeply with me. She said, we can't keep doing what we're doing and expect to get out of the situation we're in. We have to transform the things that are holding us back. That takes a lot of bravery, and that's very challenging for local governments.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're seeing, is that it's tough when the people objecting to a decision you want to make are your neighbors, are people your kids went to school with. It can start to feel so personal on a local government level, in a way that it doesn't when it's so abstracted, when there's, you know, like a handful of people in the Senate making decisions. You have to see your neighbors every day, and you have to live with the consequences of your decision in like a very concrete, material way. And so, yeah, it is going to take some bravery, and I think some preparation for difficult votes that I don't know if anyone like prepared them for what they were going to be dealing with. We've already done all the easy things, especially when it comes to transportation. We have already done every easy thing, and all that's left are hard votes. So Jess, I don't know if you want to ask this question, like this last question that gets at what my big concerns have been.
I do, because I have a couple of ideas about it. Something that we've brought up a couple of times is, what does it mean to vote for this millage, but still keep up the heat on our electeds and on ourselves to continue to make progress? I have a few suggestions for that. One, I think council needs to ask staff what the consequences of omitting land use from the A20 framework are, and what benefit it would be to bring it back in. Because I think what we're going to hear is that we are leaving a huge means of making change on the table by not having it in there. I also think that we need to increase the pressure on updating the comprehensive land use plan and on having our very first comprehensive housing plan. And what I mean is not just affordable housing. That work is moving forward, and to an extent it's funded. But we don't have a housing plan for housing at all levels of affordability. And we're seeing that, right? We're seeing that in the market. The last median selling price that I saw for houses in Ann Arbor, and this was 2.5 years into the pandemic, was $478,000. I mean, we're great, you guys, but we are not $478,000 great. We're not.
Absolutely not.
Right. So we need policy help, policy strategy, and policy support for affordability at all levels of the income spectrum, all levels. And we need our electeds to take the lead on that work. And I think we also need to take a critical look at our community engagement strategies across the board and understand how we're tokenizing, quote unquote, community engagement. Because I think here, and this isn't unique to Ann Arbor, I think a lot of communities do that, but we tokenize it. We say, well, we put out the survey, we've heard from the community, this is now a collaborative process. And I largely don't think that's true. And be more critical about when in the process and how we're asking for feedback.
Yeah. I think related to that is making fewer of these kinds of changes and these kinds of decisions, political decisions, and making them operational staff decisions, which partly is about reducing the amount of public engagement that we do for things like housing, and especially for transportation. You know, I'm working with my neighbors right now to collect signatures to ask for a sidewalk on a major pedestrian bike route in our neighborhood that does not have any sidewalks. And that's a very popular cut through route for cars. And we've been looking at all these different ways that we can ask for support, because we need sidewalks. We want traffic calming. We want traffic calming sort of at like on the arterials that bound our neighborhood, so that we can get out of the neighborhood safely on foot or on bike. There are so many different processes through which we can make these requests. It turns out there are failed traffic calming petitions on almost every cut through street in my neighborhood. And they're failed because of the threshold of how many signatures you have to get to ask the city to consider investigating a speed bump. And we could completely flip that and say, we know there are about 12 neighborhoods in the city that have major cut through traffic issues. We're going to calm them all. We're going to throw out some speed bumps. We're going to do some stuff, and we're not going to ask permission, and we're not going to force the people who've been living with this to put in so much time and coordination to ask for this. Time and coordination we could be spending on something else. And so like this is an example that's fresh in my mind because it's like happening right this second in my life. But taking the politics out of these decisions feels like it's not exactly about keeping the heat on the electeds. It's taking the heat out of the equation and making the, some of this work the default.
I appreciate that reframing. I do think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how we do that. And I think it probably takes heat to get there, right? Mm-hmm. But these are the kinds of like making it process mm-hmm. instead of making it like the default process, making mm-hmm. it like the process that we do, as opposed to the process that involves sending postcards and having meetings and having public comments and allowing a really narrow slice of the population who don't want any change at all to be the voices that we listen to.
I think that's 100% true. And it brings me back to actually what was my initial resistance to the millage, and talking with Missy talked me past it. But I've said on this pod before, and if you're friends with me, you've probably heard me say it 100 times, we cannot spend ourselves out of the climate crisis. We can't buy ourselves out of it. It's going to require transformational behavior change on the part of every one of us. I appreciated Missy because she agreed with me and also was very careful to say, we need to not put the onus on fixing this on individuals when, you know, a handful of companies in the world are responsible for 70% of the climate crisis manifestations that we're seeing right now. I appreciated that. And she also affirmed that, no, we're not going to get 100% there without all of us participating in it. This brings me to something lovely that keeps coming up in my Instagram feed, that it just has me marinating on what action means in some really lovely and generative ways. There's, I believe she's an oceanologist. I know that she's some kind of climate scientist. Dr. Ayanna Johnson recently released a TED Talk on what it means for individuals to productively and effectively engage climate change. And she is another one who says, we didn't cause it. We are not the only ones responsible for fixing it, but we can engage it. And she's created what she calls the climate Venn. And in fact, there is a whole Instagram account devoted to people's climate Venn diagrams. And what she says is that you should look at what work needs doing, the climate and justice solutions that are needed, what you're good at, your skills, your resources, and your networks. And thirdly, and she's the only person I've heard talk about this, what brings you joy, what brings you satisfaction and delight, and finding the overlap of those three areas is your climate action. For me, that's one of the reasons that I bike for my errands. It actually does bring me huge joy. I feel like I'm 10 years old every time I climb on that bike. I also deeply feel like I'm 42 years old every time I climb on that bike. But both and, right? So I do it because it's good for the climate, but I also do it because it's really fun when it's not unsafe and really scary. It is really fun. So I think that that's one of the things that I'd like for us to kind of close this part with, is that this millage must be both and. I think I want us to look at writing these checks as the beginning of a new phase of climate work for Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah, good fight, Molly.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. You know, we disagreed on some stuff. Turns out we actually agree on some of the things, some of the points.
I think we agree on everything. You
know, yeah,
yeah.
It just brought us to slightly different places. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we can start to wrap up. So first, I wanted to thank all of you who voted for us in the Best of Washtenaw Best Local Podcast category. We will find out the results next month, and we will absolutely let everyone know the moment we hear. Speaking of next month, which is August, we are taking totally off from the podcasts, including we're not going to do any rerun episodes. We're taking a break. And then when we come back, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to be doing interviews, which we've done some in the past, obviously, talking both to people from around this community, but also across the country, across issues and locations, to get some new ideas for Ann Arbor and for Washtenaw County, and to get a better sense of what we have in common with a lot of these municipalities around the country that are experiencing a lot of the same things that we are, and also to think about the ways that we're different and the things that are unique to Ann Arbor. So what this means is that we're going to be shifting away from the council meeting preview episodes. We learned a ton from doing those previews.
Man, talk about getting informed, getting ready for those episodes by getting ready for those meetings. Whew, yeah, I was informed.
But we also started to experience the limits of what engaging at the council meeting level really were, and started wanting to really explore other ways of bringing about change by learning about other people, other ways of organizing, other what's going on in other places. So our goal is still about getting informed and getting involved, but it's about expanding that conversation beyond the council chambers. So that said, if there's something particularly special to us or really like big deal coming up on a council agenda, we might still bring those things back. It's not like never again are we talking about or thinking about city council. It's just that we're really shifting the focus and trying to expand our lens a little bit for ourselves and also hopefully for our listeners to start thinking about the gestalt, the whole picture of what we're trying to do.
One of the things that we've known about the council preview format is that it is an important part of getting informed and getting involved. It is also necessarily and by definition reactive. We are reacting to the business that's put before us. And one of the aspirations for pivoting to interviews is that Molly and I are looking to expand our imaginations and hopefully by extension, your imaginations about what's possible. And so we're not just reacting to the business that's put before us. We're asking for bigger things. And we felt like this climate millage was a really great springboard for pivoting this. And Missy said that too. We ended that episode on big dreaming. We're talking about this millage being the beginning and not the end. And that's kind of how we see the interviews. We've got a few lined up that we're really excited about. We've got a few more that we're hoping will say yes, but haven't we haven't confirmed yet. So we will be putting out the schedule when we have it. But we just wanted to let you guys that the format itself is going to be changing and to what, and a little bit about why.
And that's it for this episode of Ann Arbor AF. Come check out past episodes and transcripts at our website, annarboraf.com. Keep the conversation going with fellow Ann Arbor AFers on Twitter at the A2 Council hashtag and Facebook in the Ann Arbor Housing for All group. And hey, if you want to send us a few dollars at ko-fi.com/AnnArborAF to help us with hosting, we always appreciate it. We're your co-hosts, Molly Kleinman and Jess Letoff, and thanks to producer Scott Trudeau. Theme music is I Don't Know by Grapes. You can reach us by email at annarborafpod@gmail.com. Get informed, then get involved. It's your city.